I knew this was going to be a special show, but wow.
Totally bonkers.
Y'all made it extra special.
I don't even know what to say. I'm like, this is just so cool. I can't just stop staring at everyone. I know we have to record a podcast. Also, Tim.
Hi, Maggie.
Hi, Tim. You look fantastic.
You look even more fantastic.
Hey, thanks.
But when doesn't she is the question.
And same.
Answer, never. The answer, the correct answer is never.
I wore a headband tonight. I heard they're back in style.
It's very kind of Barbie and Kiki. Hi, Barbie.
Hi, Barbie.
Hi. Helps.
Barbies. Okay, Tim.
Putting correct glasses on helps.
Yeah, putting the correct glasses on. Look at these beautiful, wonderful people. Oh, wait, he has professional notes that he needs to refer to.
Hold on, they put my
because,
notes.
Yes. I'll just take more pictures of you all. Because these lights, it's crazy. Look at the green. Have you all seen this room? It's also St. Patrick's Day tomorrow for anybody who's
hoity, 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 hoy.
I think there were two people.
Hey, Richmond, Virginia.
Oh, my gosh.
I would like you to meet the greatest podcast partner in crime in the history of podcasts, and my bestie, Ms. Margaret Cassidy Lawson.
That's me.
Maggie, meet Richmond, Virginia.
Hi, Richmond, Virginia.
Now, you know, Maggie, this show is already special for a couple of reasons.
I would love to hear those reasons. I mean, it already feels special, just this room is, I'm overwhelmed. I'm really overwhelmed, but I want to hear your other reasons for it being so special.
Well, it's a good thing I took some notes on this.
Yes, it's good. I'm gonna
so
open water.
This show is extra special because A, it's the this is the halfway point in the Psych Pod Tour 24.
Oh yeah, this is.
We're four live shows in. We've got at least four left.
At least. So
I mean, I'm not good at math, but that's halfway, right?
Yeah. I have no idea.
And there's you ready for the next one? This one's kind of big. I have a podcast first. I'm gonna do show first. It's a podcast first.
Oh yeah.
For the very first time of live shows, we have an actual live guest. So,
wait,
ladies and gentlemen, may I introduce our very own resident Papa Bear, the amazing Corbin Burnson, ladies
yeah.
and gentlemen. Oh, thank God, he actually came out.
Get over there.
You kiss the ring,
okay. Yes.
Thanks, buddy.
Wait, I want one.
Hello.
How lucky are we?
Oh, I got the mic problem now. No. Okay, how's that? I'll adjust.
They're like three other guests that we will be dealing with this. Here we go. Yeah.
Now, we could not think of a more fitting person to be our first live guest.
No.
I'm your first live guest.
We're not listening backstage?
So who's your first dead guest?
Well, we'll see how the show goes.
Yes. Yes.
So this, even though this episode
feels short.
Dear Henry's short. Maybe not. Well, there's two things.
Not in it so much. One of those scripts I looked at and went like, I can take a vacation.
There's two things wrong with this episode. One, not enough Corbin. But because it is an episode that deals with parenting of fathers, we thought it must be absolutely fitting that the heart of the show, which is really, I mean, the heart of our show is the Henry... What's his name? Sean relationship?
Yeah.
I mean, other than the last
right.
year. Who?
Other than yeah. the last year relationship. But yeah. So we need to have a resident Papa Bear come.
Yeah. Well, I loved what I became in the show.
Yeah.
I always considered myself like Ringo. Like, I'm not John Paul or George. I just carry the beat.
Yeah. Maggie, you want to know
it allowed you guys to be crazy.
By the way, though, without the beat.
There ain't no band.
That's it. That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Ain't no dancing without the beat.
I'm so happy you're here.
I'm thrilled to be here.
We don't get to see each other that often. And the thing I love about Corbin is whenever you see Corbin, for me, whenever I see you, one of my favorite things about you is just like small talk does not exist. He's like, tell me how you are. Like, don't tell me where you've been traveling. Don't tell me where you've been. He just goes right
to. Who are you dating?
Who are you dating? Who,
yeah. And that's your sex life. Way of saying it.
Are you happy? Are you like, and it's like, it's always been like that.
But you know, as I get older, one thing that's really strange, I'm going to be 70 this year. And I realize, you know, if God gives me another 20, 25, 15, 20, there ain't a lot of time left for how's the weather.
Correct.
You know, there's just not time for it. And I just find, even with a lot of you guys, I think if you've come up to my table, I'll get into it. It's like, I want to know stuff about life. I want to know about how you feel. I want to know these things.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, 70 is where small talk stops, for sure.
No, Corbin, I'm sorry. We're going to go back to, like, flights you and I had during the show and everything. I'm sorry, it wasn't 70. This is you. And I love this.
Right.
This is my favorite things about you. It was always like that. It would never get on the flight and be like, so what are you going to do when you land in L.A.? You'd be like, Maggie, how are you?
Yeah, right.
Like, how are you really?
I think it came from my mother. Anybody remember my mother from The Young and the Restless? Yeah. She was pretty straight. Well, no, she's pretty drunk most of the time, but she was but she was straight when she was drunk. Which means drinking's a good thing? I don't know.
I mean, have you met us? We think it's great.
I know you do. That I do remember.
What is this thing called bourbon?
What does this have to do with this episode? Other than
we're gonna get
your father.
You know, Maggie, you want to know the other problem with this
so
episode?
Excited, right. You're here.
What? I'm thrilled to be here.
Yes.
Do they all know how much we all stay in touch, the time? Like I'd say, at least every couple of days.
Oh,
I mean,
it's
some
rare that a couple days go by that we don't text.
I started texting everybody in London. I said we have to do the Sherlock Holmes episode.
Here's how much Corbin loves all of you and us. He just got off a plane from Europe. You're jet-lagged out of your mind. You did the convention all day.
Yeah.
And yet he's like, absolutely, I'm going to come play with you guys.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's the love and dedication that he has.
I know you got a big show to do here and all, but honest to God, straight up, I've done a ton of stuff. And I don't know if what we all had for those years, but continuing on, I don't know if you can repeat that. You know, I don't have it with L.A. Law. I thought for years L.A. Law would be it.
Yeah.
But no, this is like, you know, even if I've done four other shows since then. But it never is quite, I'm always like, it ain't like psych.
Yeah. One of the things that I love, and I know we will get to the episode, but I'm just so excited you're here, is that I feel like in one of the things I love about doing conventions and in these Comic-Cons is that we get to actually have this moment with all of you. We know how we feel about the show. And we know how lucky we are to have had the experience. But to actually get to experience it with all of you and the love we all feel, then you bring that love. And like it's like this extended family. It just keeps growing and going. And we're so lucky. It's craziest thing. And we're so grateful.
And the amount of people that come up that say, for me especially, they say, going back to what the episode's about, you remind me of my dad and the relationship, and you got us through tough times in our relationship. And I know as a show, so many people have come up to all of us and said, you got us through some really rough times, you know, whether it's illness or death or some other horrible part of life.
I mean, a pandemic we all just lived through. I mean, are still living through.
I really dug the pandemic.
You what?
Yeah, I was a big fan of the pandemic. I'm a big fan of the earth, and the earth went like, whew, thank God.
Yeah, you are a big fan of the earth.
I'm a big fan of the earth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait, really quick. I know there are a few people who are coming tonight, and their birthday is tomorrow on St. Patrick's Day, so happy birthday to those who are celebrating tomorrow. And, okay, what should we dive in?
Luckily, I have I brought a spare.
What do you got there? You're fancy.
I'm fancy. This
that
come
like
along.
An extra
these
battery?
Are my very professional notes.
Not only you're fancy, you're one of the most handsome men I know.
Right?
Well, look who's talking, Mr. Almost. What?
Hey, maybe we should do a series together. No, isn't he? I mean, I look at pictures of Tim, and you're an extraordinarily good-looking man. And I'm okay saying that.
Well, I feel really lucky right now because I am just, what am I?
You're a beautiful blanked? Woman between two beautiful pieces of bread. You are kind of like bologna, but.
Yep, I'm just full of a bunch of weird ingredients. I'm actually not a real food. No, I'm kidding.
Oh, you're a vegan. You're like tofu.
Sorry.
Okay.
No.
I am trying to get
fine. You know what? I'll take that.
Tofu on Kaisers.
Is this fun? We're having. Sorry.
Yeah,
we'll
I know.
We'll do the episode. We promise. But
okay,
we,
Maggie, hang on 1 second. Let me.
Okay, I'm hanging on. I'm hanging on.
Yeah, by a thread.
I am together.
Oh yeah.
Okay, I'm just looking at my notes. We got the.
You're the most untogether together person I've ever met.
So Maggie,
your charm. What? I'll shut up now.
I love you so much, Corbin.
So, Maggie, remember last week in Seattle? It was, you all know who? You all listened to the last week's episode already, right? I don't know if you guys talked about it. Okay, and if you haven't, what the hell is wrong with you?
Yeah.
Not only talking to the people in this room, but to all our listeners for the podcast. So, you know, last week was a really special episode because my hometown has pretty special visitors.
Yeah.
So, Maggie, remember last week in Seattle, I introduced you to my very first leading lady for my first school play?
Yes, that was so cool.
Well, I think I've got something I can trump that with. Sorry, hold on. I'm getting my notes. So in addition, but there's a very special guest tonight, my big sister, Anna, which here's why y'all should care. Because you have Anna to thank for me becoming an actor, because she's the woman who allowed her 16-year-old dumb brother to crash on her couch all summer long in Jersey when I could then attend the American Academy of Dramatic Arts in New York and become the actor I am today. So thank you, Anna. Thanks for putting up with me.
Thank you, Anna.
So, but even better than my first leading lady is she, Alice, Anna brought one of her best friends, our old neighbor, Linda Brooks. So Linda was, there's a reason, I'm getting this right, hang on. So last week was my first leading lady. Linda was the first person to ever cast me.
Linda, I didn't know that.
That's why I'm telling you the story. If you knew this, I wouldn't bother the story.
After all these years, there are things I still don't know.
I'm trying to keep our friendship fresh. So one day, I'm standing in front of my house on the sidewalk, and Linda leans down and asks a little 6-year-old Tim if he wants to be in a play. Which is how in 1977, I became the first 6-year-old, the youngest person ever to play Hamlet. Unfortunately, my theatrical debut was not quite as grand.
Oh, my God.
In reality, my very first role was caterpillar larva. It was a really challenging role. I'm 6 years old. I had to huddle on the bottom of the church stage. It was basement of the church. The stage in the church basement, which sounds a little stranger than it is. I had to huddle with a bunch of the 6-year-olds and just wiggle because I'm a caterpillar. And eventually, you're not going to believe it, we all turned into a beautiful butterfly. Much like a young beat cop, Carlton Lassiter, eventually turned into the, spoiler alert, chief of the Santa Barbara Police Department.
Yeah.
See? I turned as a physical member of that.
I'm so happy that I knew the caterpillar story. I feel like we're still close, you know? I knew that one. All right, Tim.
Before you... Hey, Maggie. Oh, no, I got a question.
Oh, yes, this is important.
Corbin Burnson.
Yeah? Me, where?
It's you. Are you ready to help my dear friend Maggie and I podcast the shit out of this episode?
We're talking about Psych.
I think so.
And yes, I am ready to fill in all the blanks of this episode because I'm fairly certain I read the script when we got it. Yeah.
I definitely watched it last night.
In addition to one of the problems with this episode being not enough Corbin, the other problem with this episode is there's actually no murder.
Thank you, Danny. We had to get that one in because.
Well, you know what was weird? What was weird about the show and related to me like not knowing a lot about this episode, I was never involved in the murders. I was always Sean. Yeah, you know, I mean. That was like, you know, it would be blank, nothing. Sean!
Yeah. And but you Sean'd the shit out of it.
But you know my favorite scene ever, though, I have to say? Ever, the whole time, is in whatever, maybe the last movie, on the third movie, out on my old porch with you.
That was so good.
With all the hats in the room, which is up there, that was a stellar moment in my life, working with you there.
Corbin, it's too early for me to cry, but thank you. That was incredibly special.
I don't remember a lot of all the episodes because I read the scripts. I'm a dedicated actor-ish. And I just, you know, the here's the reality. I didn't understand half of what these guys wrote. I didn't really get it. I would wait like you guys for the wrap-up, like, oh, okay.
Maggie, did we ever
Corbin,
do that?
We were the exact same way.
Every wrap-up, I
James
would
James was the same way, and he wrote them.
I know. He'd be like, oh, that's right.
Well, that's how it, oh, okay.
There was a lot of that on set, but yeah. You know, it all came together. It all worked out. I think most of the cases make sense.
They did.
Yeah.
In the wrap-up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which James would seem to, like, memorize, like, 2 seconds before he did them.
He was so insane. How did he do that?
He's James.
I mean, he's James. Yeah. That's true. James, he's magical.
Hey, Maggie, what episode are we doing?
That's one word for it.
Wait, I have a question for Richmond.
Do it.
Is Richmond GalaxyCon Psycho's family ready to help us podcast the shit out of it?
Well, then now it can start.
We couldn't leave them out. All right.
So a little insider insight. On the set, you've heard us mention our dear first lady, Richard Coleman. So whenever there was a stunt or something that required safety, he would always, Richard had a phrase, which was, safety never takes a holiday.
Yep.
He was also British, so it makes more sense with the accent. But along those lines, something very important is about to happen. So because safety never takes a holiday, I need you all to pull the car over. I know, I'm serious. If you're driving, I'm not kidding around here. Pull the car over because it's just too big. Turn the treadmill down to a nice casual strolling speed. Put the laundry basket down so you don't drop it on a cat. Turn off the wood chipper because, are you all sitting down? Oh, good, you're sitting down. We have a massive series first. For the first time in 120 episodes, the cold open features a young Juliet O'Hara. And proceed.
All right, we'll start now. Ready? Season 6, episode 7. What is it? Y'all are good. Written by Todd Harthan, who we love, and directed by, who is just directing the shit out of it this season, Mel Damsky. I feel like every episode lately that we've been like freaking out about, it's a Mel episode. So this is a fun fact that I wonder if you psychos know. What is the pineapple sighting? Rowan, yes, there is no pineapple sighting. I didn't know that episode existed. It does. Anyway, this is major breaking.
Wait, no pineapple? No murder. What the hell is happening in the world?
I think we focused on emotions in this episode.
Oh, we were doing Monk.
We were doing... Corbin. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes, just bringing it. Okay, ready? So flashback, we are in Florida in 1990. Oh, celebrating Juliet's birthday. We watch as Juliet stays inside, waiting for her dad to show up for the party. The doorbell rings. Juliet runs to the door to hand her dad a piece of cake, only to be met by a door-to-door salesman and disappointment.
Soul-crushing.
Brutal. Brutal. I will say, I did choose the cake in the scene.
Of course you did.
It was angel food cake. Anyway, cut to present day. Chief Vic goes over a case with Sean, Gus, Lasseter, and Juliet involving stolen oxygen masks from a medical supply company. Lasseter and Juliet suspect the criminals are going to sell the tanks for a profit. However, after they learn the street value isn't that high, they think perhaps this crew is up to something bigger. Juliet's 30th birthday is coming up.
Oh, so her 30th birthday. So this episode was set
a last
week
year.
Ago.
Go ahead.
Even our notes are the same.
Same joke.
So Lasseter, of course, Lasseter, y'all are lucky at home. Lasseter, sapphire bottle blue. Drink up, folks.
Oh, yeah, it's time to drink up. It's good. Wait, there was a shaker. There's a pineapple shaker in the audience. There it is. That's right. There. Oh, right there. Yes, I asked. I said every time we had to take a drink, let's do the shaker. So, okay. Juliet's 30th birthday is coming up. And she and
last week.
And reads a list of things Sean plans for her party, such as a bounce house, a slip and slide, and giant ponies.
I remember that.
Although I believe the word is ginormous.
You remember something.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, ginormous ponies. That's right. Oops, sorry. Anyway, Sean notices that she has received a gift in the mail from her estranged father, Frank. Sean is excited at the prospect of meeting Juliet's dad, but she quickly informs Sean that she wants nothing to do with him and that he isn't presentable. I liked that, the use of that word. I thought that was good. Anyway, Sean sees the return address on the card Frank sent her, and from there, Sean decides to visit Frank in L.A. as to make amends between him and Juliet. Sean and Gus sneak onto a private golf club and meet Frank O'Hara, Juliet's dad, played by...
I'm sorry, you mean the legend William Shatner.
Can we just talk about my family for a second? William Shatner, my brother is John Cena.
Some good genes in this family. They're very talented.
Let's talk about today's sponsor, ButcherBox. The only subscription service that delivers high-quality meat right to your door, because who has time to go hunting these days? With ButcherBox, you get to choose from a variety of meats, like grass-fed beef, free-range chicken, and heritage-breed pork. It's like having a farm-to-table experience without actually having to deal with the farm or the table. ButcherBox makes it easy to flex those culinary muscles with their convenient delivery service. It's so convenient. It's so easy. And it's so good. No more last-minute trips to the grocery store, staring into your empty fridge, wondering if cereal counts as a balanced meal. Nope. ButcherBox has the ultimate convenience, an incredible value, and gives you the peace of mind for a good piece of meat or fish, I might add. I love when I get my ButcherBox delivery. Honestly, one of the best parts of my week. It's so good. It's just so good. The key to becoming a real prep master, staying stocked up on the essentials. ButcherBox is here to help you do just that. They're offering our listeners their choice of a weeknight meal must-have. 3 pounds of chicken thighs, 2 pounds of ground beef, or 1 pound of premium steak tips for free. Did you hear that? I said free for a whole year. Plus, you get $20 off your first order. So sign up today at butcherbox.com/pineapple and use code pineapple to choose your free offer and get 20% off. When I was exploring mood for the first time, I was sort of looking for something that, you know, that would make me feel a little bit more relaxed. So it would help me sleep a little bit better and kind of like maybe help slow down. And so when I tried their products, I kind of felt just that. I liked it because I didn't feel something that was so over the top that I like didn't feel myself. It was just mellow and nice. And Mood is known for their federally legal THC. Now they are adding their most potent product yet to the lineup, introducing hemp-based THCA flower, the future of legal THC. Try it along with all of Mood's other amazing offerings like flour, gummies, vapes, and more. And for a limited time, Mood is giving our listeners a free THCA pre-roll and 20% off your first order. Just visit hellomood.com and use our code pineapple. Introducing THCA flower, Mood's latest and most potent breakthrough in the world of legal cannabis. Since THCA converts into THC when you heat it, you get access to the classic marijuana high. To the classic marijuana high. And Mood has 10 high-inducing strains, the most potent they have ever offered. THC products you can trust. Mood puts an end to guessing games with federally legal forms of THC extracted from hemp plants. All of their products are regularly tested in third-party labs, sourced from small family farms, and pesticide-free. Something for every mood. Tested and tailored by in-house experts. Different strains for different moods. Different strains for specific moods, from euphoric to energized, creative to chill, and plenty of versatile products that go with whatever mood you are going for. Try Mood's new THCA flower today. For a limited time only, get 20% off your first order and a free THCA pre-roll. Just go to hellomood.com and use promo code pineapple. That's hellomood.com, code pineapple, for 20% off your order and a free THCA pre-roll. Whether you like fresh-faced, full glam, or somewhere in between, you've probably seen Thrive Cosmetics viral tubing mascara because it's amazing. You know, the one in the turquoise tube that's all over your social media. Thrive Cosmetics beauty products are certified 100% vegan and cruelty-free. It's the first thing I look for now, that cruelty-free symbol. Made with clean, skin-loving ingredients, high performance and trademark formulas, and uncompromising standards. It's easy to see why their bestsellers have thousands of five-star reviews. Thrive Cosmetics believes in giving back to the community by donating their high-performance products or much-needed funds that help communities thrive, which I absolutely love. It's just a beautiful thing. It feels so good. It's not just about their incredible makeup, but they have a great message, which I stand with. However, I'm currently obsessed with a Brilliant Eye Brightener. I love this stuff. It's a highlighter stick. It brightens and opens your eyes, gives you an instant eye lift, but it also can work as like an eyeshadow. It can give you a little contour. It's so good. You just apply it to the inner corner of your eyes. You look rested and effortless. It's beautiful. Use as an eyeshadow for the perfect daytime glow, or use the metallic shades for an easy smoky eye. Its foolproof formula makes it extremely easy to apply and blend any of the 16 shades. You hear me sing the praises of Thrive Cosmetics almost every week because I am completely obsessed. Not only that, I have gotten everyone around me obsessed. Thrive Cosmetics is luxury beauty that gives back. Right now, you can get an exclusive 20% off your first order at thrivecosmetics.com/pineapple. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CauseMetics, cause, CAUSE, medics, METICS.com/pineapple for 20% off your first order.
Wait, have we met my mom? Who's going to be my mom if we ever get to meet? Who? IDK. Okay.
Glenn Close.
Wait, I don't, what?
If we're talking talent-wise, it would be Glenn Close.
That would be so cool. Oh, that would be so
cool. So I have a psych degree of separation with Bill.
Oh, yes. Tell us.
Because it's not a psych episode of this psych degree of, it's not an episode of The Psychologist Center. A psychology podcast without a psych degree of separation. So in 2004, a young Tim Amundsen was first on set with Bill on a little show called Boston Legal.
Oh, yeah. I remember that show.
And he doesn't, because we didn't have any lines together. But I didn't make a huge impression on Bill at the time. But do you remember the dinner we had after that? So Bill,
yes,
because Mr. Damski and Bill were friends, because I think Mel directed some Boston Legal, he convinced Bill, Mr. Shatner, Bill, to come up and play with us. And then Bill's so cool, Mel invites him to dinner, and he shows up. And I remember sitting down to dinner with all of us, and him just being so cool, he's like, okay, I know why I'm here. You want stories. What do you want to know?
Yeah. He was. He just showed up and was like, oh, I think I know my job here is to, I'm just going to save you from having to ask, so I'll just tell a story, which he did all night. He was amazing.
I played his divorce attorney on Boston Legal.
And so what?
I went up to him. I went up to a Comic-Con and I said, "Hey, Bill Corbin Burns, I played your divorce attorney on Boston Legal." He goes, my real divorce attorney. I went, "No, like on Boston, the TV show Boston Legal you were on. I played your divorce attorney." Yeah,
that's funny.
So it's kind of a that make us related? No.
That makes us know.
Six
no.
degrees of something.
It makes it's.
It's a
six degrees of James Rene Rodriguez.
That's true. Oh, that should be a new fun game.
Yeah.
We call those psychronicities. Like
oh, psychronicities.
There
okay,
we go.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but that just came to mind.
No, that's a good
So note. That's a very rare
interrupt.
Double psych degree of separation.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well done, sir.
Okay.
Yeah, we love this. Okay. Sean.
My mother dated William Shatner.
Well, that's a huge
back
one.
In the day. Although he won't remember that one either. Conveniently, when I ask him about it.
I did always kind of think there was a resemblance, but okay.
Daddy? I'm sorry, I'm going to space, kid.
Okay.
I'm just riffing here.
Did you just say daddy?
Well, this is about a dad episode, isn't it?
It's
He's
all
your play
scene.
Pretend dad. He might be my real dad.
Oh, this just gets
okay.
better.
Getting out of hand.
Better.
It's the last time I'll be invited to do one of these.
Oh, no. Unfortunately, we're going to beg you to come every time. This is so funny.
Don't forget there's still a whole panel tomorrow, buddy.
Okay.
All right. I'll save
well,
a few.
That's true. Yeah, we got to save some fun for that. But not really. You can bring it all tonight.
Okay.
Okay, so Sean bonds with Frank almost immediately, and he goes to tell Frank that he is dating his daughter and needs to fix the broken relationship Frank has with Juliet. Frank takes this to heart and invites them into his richly decorated abode. Sean tells Frank that he is a psychic and proves it psychically by psychically revealing he knows Frank is about to embark on a yacht vacation. Sean is right. Frank is impressed. Back at the station. This doesn't go well.
I feel like by now we stopped doing the Sean visioning. Because there was an empty key spot that said yacht.
Was it not a vision?
Well, I mean, he saw it, but there wasn't the.
It wasn't the. Yeah, yeah.
Do you like how I did that?
Where we're like, I wonder if at that point.
I think those were like $2,000 a piece. And they thought, like, now.
They were like, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we didn't need to do this. And
also,
anymore.
Like, the audience gets it at
yeah,
this point.
Yeah, right. Yeah, we'll just put a sound effect. Woo! Yeah.
So back at the station, Sean tells Julia that he fixed things with her dad and he's coming to her birthday party. Wow. Really? Anyway, Juliet is pissed to hear this news and tells Sean the truth about her dad. He is a con man and a criminal, and the mansion that he was, the mansion that they were in wasn't his. Sean is shocked that Frank duped him, but also intrigued to figure out Frank's game. Cue the theme song. All right, meanwhile, the masked men who stole the oxygen tanks from earlier break into Lompoc prison and bust out a known safecracker named Jimmy Fitz. Great name. When the SBPD gets wind of the prison break, Frank O'Hara...
Sorry, I interrupted. But yes. Juliet taking the boys into the conference room and pissed off Juliet was a sight to see.
I was mad.
Which just reminds me, like, do not get on the wrong side of Maggie.
It's like not raised voice mad. It was like, I was so mad. It was like all internal and I was pissed. Anyway, I liked that. Why are you laughing?
You acted the shit out of that scene.
I don't know that I acted the shit out of it, but I was like, oh, that's mad.
I thought you were good when you roller skated.
I mean, I really...
Just came to mind, I don't know.
I really committed.
I was a big, like, women's roller derby in L.A. back in the day, so...
It's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Chicks roller skating, I mean,
yeah,
come on.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, when the SBPD gets wind of the prison break, Frank O'Hara has already arrived at the station. Sean and Gus approach Frank first to ask him why he lied to them. Frank apologizes and explains that it was Sean's influential words that convinced him to turn a corner and to mend his relationship with Juliet.
You know what sets up your relationship with Bill in this episode is when you first see him, the way you say Frank.
Frank.
Like, it's no dad, there's no father, no. It's just... That solid use of the first name, like, oh, this is not going to go well.
Yeah, yeah. Lassiter and Juliet explained to the team that the criminals used the stolen oxygen tanks to cut through the wall that led to Fitz's escape. That's when Frank shouts out, knowing who the guy is. But the second Juliet sees Frank at the station, she is not pleased. Lassiter believes that breaking Fitz out was their end game. Frank chimes in, saying he disagrees. He believes the criminals needed Fitz's skills as a safecracker for the much bigger score they have in the works. Juliet has a sidebar with Sean, Gus, and Frank. She is upset at Sean. I like sidebars. She's upset at Sean and Gus and wants Frank to stay out of her personal life as well as her professional life. But Frank turns out to be right about Fitz when Lassiter gets a call saying the criminals have just stolen a bunch of construction equipment. Frank believes the criminals are going to use the stolen equipment for another break-in in the next 24 hours. Frank also tells Juliet to keep a close eye on the leader of the crew, Chad Emai. Later, Sean gets a call from Juliet saying that there were a couple of complaints of construction noise downtown, believing that Frank wants to get back in the good graces of his daughter. Added with the fact that Frank knows a lot about the criminals the SBPD are investigating, Sean decides to hire Frank. Just gets worse and worse. All right, they show up to the scene and realize that a series of underground vaults were broken into and the entire safe was stolen. Juliet is furious when she sees Sean and Gus have hired Frank. Yes, sir.
So this construction scene set, I remember very well. It was...
Oh, me too.
It was cool. It was obviously an exterior shot. And it was like a Friday night. It was really getting to early morning hours. And Bill had to get on a plane to, I think, Toronto, across the country, because he had a convention appearance. So he goes, we get him, he wraps out, we wrap him in the scene, and he hops on his flight. But the cool thing is, so he goes and he does what we're doing here all weekend long, which is kind of exhausting. And granted, Bill had a couple of decades on me. But come Monday morning, 6 a.m., he's in the makeup trailer, same time as all the rest of us are.
Unbelievable. And we were tired, and we didn't do anything all weekend.
And I was just like... It's like, how on earth did this man just go
yeah.
cross country and time zones, do a shoot, like, do the stuff we do at a convention, and then like, back in the makeup chair at 6 a.m.
Yeah.
Cheerful, like, not a, no out of no crump, like, just alive, like,
yeah.
That's what you call a freaking pro.
Yeah, he was a pro. We were all like, oh. Well,
that's why he's 93 now and looks great.
Oh, my God.
I mean.
He looks fantastic.
He just keeps going.
Okay, so Juliet is even more upset when she sees Frank basically holding court in the SBPD, telling her colleagues his theories on why they stole the safe. Sean jumps in and says it must have been for Jimmy to have something to practice cracking until they make their real score. Frank makes a suggestion that leads Sean to predict that the criminals are after a 1943 bronze penny worth $2 million that will be showcased at the Coin Expo that just happens to be rolling into town.
It just happens to be rolling. Television. Gotta love it. I'm sorry, keep going.
It's very good, very convenient writing.
Enjoy the story that you're telling without...
Okay, here we go.
You having to wonder why I'm enjoying it?
The SBPD questions Sheldon Gates, the head of the Coin Expo. He tells them that they have... Ding, ding, ding. Yes.
Another, this is so rare, this never happens, another double psych degree of separation. So,
I know what you're going to say.
So Sheldon, the coin guy, is played by the amazing Mark Evan Jackson, who Mag and I both know because we both worked with him on the Thrilling Adventure Hour.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the course of this walk and talk, when we're talking to Sheldon about the penny, Mark is a world-class improv actor.
He's so good.
And I swear he improvised my favorite bit in this show where Sean shows him the dime. It's like, what's it? What do you give me for this? It's like 10 pennies, or maybe 2 nickels, or maybe totally other dime.
Different dime.
I guarantee you that had to be Mark improvising that. He's just so funny.
He is so funny and such a lovely human as well. Okay, so Sean suggests, hold on. He tells them that they have taken all the necessary precautions with security for the coin. They even have a decoy coin made for extra protection. Frank suggests that in order to determine if the Coin Expo is the target, they need to see if there is an inside man working the coin show. Sean suggests the inside man is the electrician, a temporary employee hired on
Sorry,
after
Maggie, would that be a man on the inside?
That would be a man on the...
Boy, nobody does
inside.
As well do that.
Frank convinces Juliet to question the electrician as he believes she's got the skills in her to get him to crack. She does, and sure enough, she gets the electrician to admit he was hired by a crew of guys and overheard them saying they were going to hit the expo to steal the penny. From this, Vic orders the entire SBPD to stake out the expo to ensure they catch the criminals. At the expo, Frank is certain he spots the criminal mastermind undercover and suggests Lassiter order a takedown. He does.
Sorry, Maggie, we're in the surveillance van now, right?
Yes.
I need to call out Lassiter's wardrobe here.
Yes, please do.
So he's in the no jacket, which means he's rocking the sexy black leather shoulder holster, which just shows a tiny tease of the butt of his Colt 1911.
Oh, that's right.
And yes, I did just use the words sexy black leather tease and butt to describe a scene in the Blue Skies comedy known as Psych. I love playing these surveillance kind of scenes so much because it was as close as Lassiter would ever get to his living out his fantasies of his being a Fed in Washington black.
Yeah.
I do remember something about this episode. May I interject?
Oh, please, for God's sakes.
Oh, hi, Corbin.
It's going to be in the form of a joke.
Okay.
Knock, knock.
Oh, God.
Who's there?
Henry.
Henry who?
Exactly. Continue. I'll be in Los Angeles while you guys are all shooting in Vancouver.
Laying by your pool.
Yeah.
Yes.
These guys asked me, did you watch the episode? Do you remember? I said, I'm not in the episode. I didn't do anything. And
but you know what?
I do remember that I'm not in the episode.
Urban, we felt you right here in the episode.
I was going to say, you're always felt.
I'm the drummer, man. That beat. Boom,
that's
boom,
the beat.
Boom, boom.
You set the beat.
All right.
All right,
that's the last thing I'll say.
Okay.
Maybe.
So Lassiter in the surveillance van, and the same reason he loves, I love playing those scenes as Lassiter, it all comes down to a little 7-year-old Timmy playing cops and robbers with his best friends in the cul-de-sac. And now it's just, I'm playing cops and robbers just with a different set of best friends.
That's right. Aww. Okay, so hold on. Let's see.
I'm sorry.
He does. Wait, the supposed criminal. Wait, what are we doing from this? Vic orders the entire speed to stake out. Yes, suggests Lassiter do a takedown. He does, but the supposed criminal is clean, and Frank was wrong. Frank is starting to crack under the pressure. He isn't finding the culprit like he said he'd be able to. Just then, Lassiter gets a call telling him that a store called Prestige Safe Deposit was just robbed. Sean determines from this that the criminals realized that the real Penny was at Prestige and not at the Expo. Frank is defeated and embarrassed that he was wrong, so he decides to take himself off the case. They look at the surveillance photos of the crime that took place at the Prestige. Sean envisions a birthmark. On one of the thieves' necks, which leads him to flash back to the same birthmark he saw on Frank's sidekick, Cato, whom he met at the mansion. Why did we name him Cato? Anyway. From this, Sean realizes that it was Frank who engineered the coin con and was the actual coin thief all along. Sean tells Frank, yes. Sean tells Frank that he needs to return the coin and make it right with Juliet or risk permanently damaging their relationship. Frank tries to explain his bad behavior, saying that once he was in the SBPD and he saw the coin opportunity, he couldn't help himself and decided to engineer the con on the fly. Sean tells Frank that he will give him time to return the coin and make it right with Juliet, but that is Frank's decision. Later, Juliet gets a tip about where the coin is. She interrogates the supposed criminal, Chad.
I think we missed a series first.
What?
So the boys drive to L.A., right?
Yes.
Series first. First time we actually see L.A. for L.A. There's this beautiful helicopter shot of the Hollywood sign.
So I think we were still in Vancouver. Did we shoot L.A. in L.A.?
No, well, I mean, it's sort of a stock footage shot of the Hollywood sign.
Oh, yeah.
So it was the first time that our show saw
L.A.,
Los Angeles.
Where we actually lived. Later Juliet gets a tip about, she interviews Chad. Yes, just taken into custody after they found the penny in his hotel room. But Juliet quickly realizes that the coin was planted in the guy's room and that it was her father, the real thief, who planted it there on purpose so Juliet would get credit for the takedown. Frank had apparently...
Because Chad was being interrogated. Chad says he came into my room like a thief. No, he came into my room in and out like a ghost.
Yeah.
And the light bulb moment you play, which is just gorgeous. And so you turn to, you look at the window, and they both Sean and Frank know that the jig is up.
Yeah. Thanks.
I just wanted to interject that and say
hey, thanks, Tim. That was. So Frank had apparently, oh my God. Thank you. Frank had apparently taken apart the window, snuck in, placed the penny on Chad's nightstand, then snuck out, put the window back together. Since they have no evidence to support an arrest, they have to let Chad go. Turns out, Chad's crew had absolutely zero plans for robbing the Expo, and that it was Frank who masterminded the whole thing. A fuming Juliet lets her dad have it and tells him all the reasons why he failed as her father to her. She tells him she never wants to see him again, and she leaves in tears.
I need to talk about the scene in a second. Sorry, your reading to him of In and Out Like a Ghost, when you're basically saying, I know it was you.
Yeah.
Like, immediately started me, like, just made me start weeping.
Mm.
Like, and so I just sort of go over the rest of the scene. I'm already gone.
Oh, my God, Tim. Oh, wait, I can get that for you if you need.
Thanks, would you?
Okay, here.
Maggie, give me a tissue. Thanks, Max.
You're so cute that you brought these. Like,
because I was on the plane watching the scene, doing my notes, and I couldn't write my professional notes because my eyes kept watering. But I was gone for the entire rest of the scene. Your work is so good. It's just seeing that you like how you just switch back to that little 9-year-old girl, heartbroken again by her father, and then back to the very fierce 30-ish year old woman, finally standing up for herself and telling him to go FO.
Thanks, Tim.
It was a beautiful scene.
I might need those. Okay, thank you. That's, wow. Okay. Wow. Okay. I leave in tears. Sean and Gus are totally defeated by the whole situation. Sean flashbacks to evidence from Chad's hotel room that leads him to believe that Chad and his crew are going to rob the Santa Barbara Bowl. Juliet confirms they did find a series of ticket stubs in Chad's hotel room, so the SBPD heads to the Santa Barbara Bowl to stake it out. While in the stakeout van, Frank shows up. This is the scene.
I've got seven paragraphs on this scene.
He apologizes. He apologizes to Juliet for everything and tells her that he, in fact, was present at many of her childhood functions, but he never told her because he didn't want his presence to embarrass her, and that Juliet had made him so proud over the years, even though she didn't know he was there to witness her accomplishments. Juliet lets this sink in.
I'm so excited to get to the scenes. Let me know when I can talk.
Well, I'll keep going. She is touched and a bit shocked to hear Frank telling her this. Frank leaves the van and immediately notices a suspicious man in a red ball cap and a gray sweater. He alerts the team in the van. You can interject. Yeah. Well, we're still there. We haven't moved on yet.
We're still in this van that's found?
Yeah, but we're about to move on.
Okay. So I can go now? I have very, very distinct memories of being in that van with everybody and watching Bill do this scene, and all of us just like holding our breath because he was so incredibly good. But we just being sort of honored to watch this man, this incredible actor, give this monologue. And one of my favorite lines is the bit where he reveals he was at your fifth grade talent show and you singing time after time. And that it's funny, out of all the lines on this series about O'Hara, that line has always stuck with me because I can definitely see a 10-year-old Maggie Lawson singing time after time in a fifth grade talent show.
Or current Maggie Lawson singing time after time at karaoke. I thought he was like, I was so moved by the scene watching it again. He's so good and he's so honest and grounded and still. Like, he's not making a lot. It's really powerful. It's really powerful. And I was really, really moved. And I want to say, too, I love all the cuts to you kind of looking over at me, which I don't even know that I noticed the first time maybe I saw this episode. But you're, like, fully checking in and also, like, moved by what's going on. Yeah.
Here's why this scene is so powerful and why Bill's performance is so amazing. It's because of his scene partner, not of us. It's because he's doing the scene with you. And you're just so moved by it. So it just goes to show back that it's never about the actor. It's always about the scene partner. It's always about who you're doing the scene with.
Yeah.
So it's always about the other actor in the scene.
Yeah. This one was old.
I always like to say acting is reacting.
It is. Yeah. I mean, it is.
It's a cut to a close-up of you, and you're starting to break. It's just... And then I start to break, watch, and it's just incredible, which goes to show for as incredibly talented individually as all of us are on the show, and let's be honest, we're pretty damn talented. But the reason Psych is so amazing is because of, A, our friendship and our chemistry and just the trust we have for each other in the scenes. It was 121 episodes of working with just these incredible people who always had your back, just like that scene with you and Bill was just, it was just... It's about the reactive. It's about just having each other there.
Yeah.
So if it's not about the actor, it's about the scene partner. It's like we had the greatest group of scene partners ever on that show.
And I think the writing too in this episode with all the twists about the con, like it's complicated. And I think about Todd writing this and like being able to piece all of it together for it to make sense, but then also having that moment between like Frank, Juliet and her dad at the end, like just. This is what I love about Psych. All of that can happen in one episode. Like, you can have all of those moments, be dying laughing, be solving a case, be, moved by this relationship sort of driving the emotion around so much, you and Sean, and also having all of the other people that we've gotten to know at this point have those moments land, too, with these people that we bring in and get to work with. Like, it's just... It's so special.
And it all happens in about the same amount of time that we've been on the stage, 44 minutes.
Yeah.
No,
it's
serious.
Just a lot
what
of
people
life.
Don't get is that the amount of time we've been here is longer probably than the actual episode. Running time of an episode.
Yeah. Anyway, incredible writing, I felt like, in this episode. So.
But again, watching that scene in the surveillance van with you and Bill, I can't at this point hardly strongly enough, where it's about the chemistry, it's about your scene partners. And Maggie, my best work on the show were always scenes with you.
Same.
I would actually say some of the best work of my career is because of you.
Okay, now I'm going to need those.
There you go.
I mean, I feel the same way. And people always say to me, like, what was your favorite episode? And it's so crazy because I always say Mr. Yin Presents. And it's not even anything that we say to each other. It's just like a moment that happens that is so loaded and real and layered, and it's brief and it's part of a montage with some music playing. But to me, it's everything. And I feel like I don't get, anyway.
No, I mean, I always go back to either the clock tower or...
I love our scenes too, Corbin.
Or the goodbye.
It's either clock tower or the goodbye.
Name one of them. I think my scenes with you were like, Juliet, passing in a hallway.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you not actually looking up.
I would like to see more if Psych, when Psych continues, that you're my father.
We're in the fourth movie.
A fourth movie. Okay, hey, all right, let's go. Okay, so Sean notices a radio van that looks suspicious. Oh, yeah, the radio, the station. That was so good. They check the supposed radio station, and sure enough, it doesn't exist. The van is the criminal's getaway vessel. Frank has a plan to let the criminals carry out the act. When they get back to the van, they won't know that it's Lassiter who's driving them to the police department to be arrested. Frank's
and you
plan
know
works.
He's singing his own danger music in his head.
Hell yeah. The thieves are finally caught, and Frank has made the first step in redeeming himself in the eyes of his daughter. Their relationship is in no way fixed, but it's a step in the right direction nonetheless. Juliet admits to Sean that his heart was always in the right place and is happy to have her dad there to celebrate her 30th-ish birthday with Frank. Okay, Frank confesses to Sean that an associate is restoring the real Penny to police custody as they speak. And that is our episode. I loved this episode.
I have a final thought on this episode.
We also have some fan questions.
I need to say this about this episode. Your performance is so incredibly beautiful and nuanced in this. And you so represented everybody out there who's at a complicated relationship with a parent. And I was so happy getting to watch this episode again, because just getting to watch your performance was so spot on. And the great thing about this show is how Steve would give all of us opportunities to just tee it up and just smash it out of the park.
That's nice. Like, knock, knock.
Who's there? No, you had some very beautiful moments.
Stop. I'm not asking for compliments or something.
I don't
think
that's why
we're on the episode.
I know.
Show me one place in those notes you see the word Henry. Yeah, exactly.
Well, no, you just they held your moment for our scene on the porch in the third movie.
No, that's different. That's a different thing.
I want that scene with Henry.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to do some fan questions really quick.
Yes.
Thank you for all of your kind words. How was it working with William Shatner, and who asked him to be a guest on the show? Oh, I think we answered that one already. Mel Damsky asked him, right? Because they were pals.
Yes.
And working with him was incredible.
I've never seen the crew so excited to work with, to be around any other guests. I mean, out of all the incredible guests we had, every time there's a break and Bill was outside, the crew would just line up and get selfies with him. They were all...
He charged $100 a piece.
They were just so giddy. But I've ever seen, they didn't care... It was just amazing to watch them all get the same joy that the actors are getting.
He's going to find me tomorrow and really get angry.
He is.
So I say he's dated my mother. That's one.
He might be your father.
Yeah, he might be my father. And
he charges,
and charges for okay. selfies for the crew. Okay.
It was a dream for me. I loved working with him. I loved this episode for so many reasons. And I just thought, Todd did an incredible job. Obviously, at this point, I knew Todd really well. It was really a very thoughtful episode. Were you at the flashback birthday party scene while shooting? I was. Oh, I think I went to do like a rehearsal or something right at the end as they were shooting it. I do remember meeting like Mini-Me, the little Julie. I remember that. And that little party was really sweet. And again, I remember choosing the cake. I remember James was always like that. If there was something specific to one of our characters in like the past or whatever, he would come up and be like, "Do you have any thoughts on this? Or do you have any, thing you want to sort of bring to personalize it?" So that was always really nice. Angel food cake every year for my birthday. That's what my mom would have. It was so cute. You know, the little like grocery store, the little angel food cakes from the grocery store, and then we'd make my grandmother's icing, and oh, that was the best. All right. Did you have any character choices, decisions to make for young Juliet? You guys are psychic. Yes.
Yeah, that's like our show.
Yeah, what? So I think I answered that. But what was my favorite scene? What was your favorite scene, it says in the episode? So, Corbin, what was your favorite scene in the episode?
Oh, the one where you... Or the other scene.
Knock, knock.
Knock, knock, no. It's when Cybill Shepherd shows up.
So good.
And we did a scene that nobody saw. It was at her hotel.
It was...
But... No.
It's a family show.
I know.
I'm not talking to you. I'm blaming them.
Okay, right. Yeah.
Tell. No. Wow.
I remember so much about that episode.
You were in LA. You were like in France.
No. What's that?
Birthday party you weren't invited to.
Oh, thank you for rubbing it in.
Yeah, right.
The birthday party at the end, that's right.
Oh, I wasn't invited to the party?
I had a 30th birthday party and you weren't invited.
Like for real or in the show?
Corbin was never in town.
I hope you were at my 30th birthday party. Wait, were you at my 30th birthday party?
Wait, like a for real birthday party?
No, I had a for real 30th birthday party.
No, I was never.
Last week you... in Vancouver.
Yeah. No, you guys always heard that you went across the street to Joey's and hang out and do all this stuff. And I was never there. No. No.
But you were flying all around the world.
Yes, I was, my beautiful wife.
Yes.
You're also, if the second you weren't working, you were in L.A. because you have a family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was part of my thing.
Corbin is the, like, family man of, like, you and your family are so close and so beautiful. And, like,
You know what's happening next week? My son Oliver is going to direct a film. My son Henry Rode. My son Angus is going to do all the art department, and my youngest son Finley is going to be operating camera. And
isn't that incredible?
And I'm financing it.
Corbin, one of my favorite real life moments between you and I is we were at LAX on our way to getting another shuttle flight to Comic Con, and we were talking about schools because I had two baby girls around the same time as you did. And you see, look, here's my advice to you. Move somewhere where the schools are free.
Yeah, right.
That's right.
Yeah, four kids in private school in Los Angeles was, I couldn't get enough psych.
Yeah. Yeah.
No families. But that's why I love Henry, because family means everything to me. At the very beginning, when I auditioned for this, that is what we talked about in this room, me and Steve and Kelly and I think James was in there at some point. His family was everything to me. And that's, I think, why I got cast. Because I think they all recognized that
That and your monstrous talent.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
But that was important, you know, that relationship with Sean. And because you want to see where he's coming from, you know. Family.
That is who you are.
Family, that's...
I mean, like I said, I wasn't kidding. It's the heart of the show is that relationship between...
Well, it's a family show. Look at this. Yeah. I mean, look at this. This is family. We're a family.
And that's why our psych thread is titled Psych Family.
That's right.
Right.
I'm getting the wrap-up music.
Why can't I hear it?
One more question. It was like a ghost that appeared over there.
When you hit 70, you don't want the wrap-up music.
Wait. Oh, there it is. It actually is. One more question, last question, because I know the answer to this, but I'm going to ask you, Corbin. What's your favorite joke from the episode?
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
I'm not taking the bite.
What? Sean.
Sean who?
So you didn't watch the episode either. Okay.
I can't believe you fell for that.
Okay, now we have to do the wrap-up music. Okay. Wait, but I just want to say we love you all so much, and he's right about the family. We see you all that way.
Wait, Richmond, you did us proud. Thank you so much.
Wait, I can't see. Anything else you all want to say? No. All right, we're good. We love you all so much. Thank you. And there's the wrap-up music.
Oh, there's the wrap-up music.
Yes, it's our music.
Or am I dying?
This is pretty heavenly.
Wouldn't that be weird?
Don't go to the light, Corbin. Don't go to the light.
Party in my room.
This is The Confused Breakfast,
a movie podcast creating a lot of ruckus around the world.
We talk about classic movies the same way that you and your friends talk about them,
with a little bit of film buff knowledge thrown in because we just can't help ourselves.
If movie quotes are part of your daily vocabulary,
if you like to talk about fun fan theories,
if you've always wanted to punch a movie character in the face,
we're here to podcast for you.
From Back to the Future,
Ghostbusters,
The Shining, and so many more.
Check out The Confused Breakfast wherever you listen to podcasts.